This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
One smile can start a friendship. One word can end a fight. One look can save a relationship. And one bike can change your life. Right, hop on your bike anytime you like. I'm sorry, I didn't realise that was so downbeat. You're listening to the Yarrabug Radio Show here on 3CR. Podcasting, streaming, or listening on that old AWA transistor in the kitchen. Many thanks to Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! Always a look into the troublesome place, America. We've got a bit of a show coming up today. Andrew from Neighbourly Ride is joining me on the tandem, I could say. Faith is away at the moment. And so we're going to have a look at a few things about what a bicycle can do for your mental health, how it can change your physical health, and how it can make you... what are you going to say, Andrew? Approach the day in a more forward-looking fashion.
Get the blood flowing and feel good, be happy.
There we go. And look, we're going to talk about a couple of things otherwise. But first off, as our usual want on the show, we're going to break into a bike moment. Andrew, have you got something to share with us?
Yeah, certainly do, Val. It actually happened yesterday on our Neighbourly Ride. I was going down Raftown Street. It's probably one of the most prettiest streets in Melbourne. That's just my personal bias there. And I was actually saying to one of the Neighbourly Riders, I said, you wouldn't believe that this was dual lane previously. And she said, no way. And I said,
yeah.
And she could not believe that this bike lane that we had wasn't there, you know, a decade ago. And I just thought, wow, that's amazing how people's paradigm can shift to not realising that, hey, there was more traffic going down this beautiful street.
It's interesting, actually, you say Raftown's, and it is a lovely street, but it's next to one of the most ugliest ones, Nicholson Street. Nobody rides down Nicholson Street. I'm sorry to anybody who lives on Nicholson Street, but there can be. It is a picture of a little bit of Australian architectural ugliness there, actually. Yeah, but anyway.
Very interesting architecture.
The Gold Rush has a lot to answer for in Australia, I've got to say. Look, I had a... now, I know if anybody's ever approached... I'm going to use the example of a roundabout. And you're looking to your left and you're trying to make eye contact with that driver. You know you're going to be first in the roundabout, so that means you actually have the right of way. But if you're... I actually try and make eye contact with the driver just to make sure that they actually see me there. And if you've had a conversation with people and you can tell they're looking at you, but actually if you have an interaction with them afterwards, a lot of people say, I looked but I couldn't see you. And this is quite a normal physical phenomenon. You're primed for looking for cars.
Yes.
So you actually don't see the bicycle. And this happens in a lot of things. Anyway, I'm going to go across a intersection the other day, and I'm cross, you know, checking left, check right, check left again, checked right again, and went to pedal into the intersection, and a postie on a bike nearly collected with me. Thank God he braked in time. I looked twice, but I did not see him.
I think we're all guilty of that, where our brain actually removes it from the vision and actually says, what's more important?
The car.
It's a car. I'm going to get killed. And it filters out everything else.
Yeah.
And I'm guilty of that myself.
Oh, we're all human. We're all exactly guilty of it. It was just interesting. And typically the Australian Post postie, all completely high vis, like stood out. but still didn't see it.
And I think that's a good takeaway for anyone who rides a bike to say, hey, you know, it can, when someone turns around and says, I genuinely didn't see you,
yeah,
they mean they did not see you.
Yeah, so, I must admit, we both had a laugh. I could just imagine.
At least you survived. I mean, they're quite heavy, those bikes.
I know, electric bike. But he wasn't going all that quick, which was lovely. But it was just one of those things that just reminds you all the time. You just, I'm not making a downer about the whole thing, but you just got to be so, and that's part of riding a bike, is you are actually observant all the time.
Well, you have to be hyper vigilant.
Yeah. Righto, so we've got rid of that. Now, a little bit of news. So, good news first. For all those people who campaigned for this in the late 1990s, you'll be happy to know that the Gibb Street footbridge is nearly ready to go.
Wow.
Well, it's not till... Not
I, did
till
see, I did see it last week, and I saw the other ramps. So yeah,
yeah,
close.
So not till December, so you've got to don't break out the party balloons or anything yet. It has got to be the longest, I think, I'll stand corrected on this, but I think there was a push for it in about 95 or something. It has been going on for a long, long time. I remember Peter Moore, who sadly deceased from Abbots Recycles, he was part of the campaign for years and years ago, and he's been gone a long time. So it's good that it's getting close.
I think Darabin Creek also took over 25 years, the Darabin Creek extension from the main Yarra Trail.
Yeah.
And where it went through one of the parks and joining the golf course there, that I think there was a lot of campaigning over multiple decades as well.
Yeah. It's interesting. Anyway, we can hold our breath and just hope that that shows up a little bit more. Look, the other bit of news I wanted to bring up is the City of Adelaide, who is quite a sizable municipality, have decided they want to get on board and get some... They're doing a fair bit of public consultation at the moment about how to do it. But they're trying to bring down, lower the speed limits. And they've got a couple of plans. I think they want to segregate some areas in the 30-kilometre zone. And they're talking about a 25K zone around schools. And then they've got another option. They've decided to put up options for people to vote on. So you only get three choices, unfortunately. And it's either 30, 40, or... I mean, they've got a speed limit of, still got a speed limit of 60 in parts of the municipality of Adelaide, which I found a little, well, we have too, so. But it's interesting to see, it'll be interesting to see how they approach it and what sort of kickback they get from it.
Well, it'd be no different, I guess, to what we experienced in Yarra when they went and wanted to put 30-kilometre zones, and now we've got the introduced across Melbourne Metro, the activity centres and school zones going down to 30 as well. And there's, you know, equally a bit of pushback. But I think it's sort of like when cigarettes came, they started reducing cigarettes in the 1970s. I mean, they did it incrementally. And I think now the jump to 30 isn't a bigger jump as it was a decade ago.
No.
Where people are starting to get accustomed to seeing 30-kilometre zones where school zones are in high-density areas, it's not as foreign as it was many decades ago.
Yeah. And, of course, the 30-kilometre zone is marked because, look, to put it bluntly, if you're hit by something going faster than 30, your chances of surviving, as in living, are vastly decreased. So that's where the 30K comes from. 25 is still too quick around schools. You could take that down at 20 without worrying about anything at all.
But what happened in this year, Transport for London actually published and saying that in road risk and serious injury, especially for children, it was 12% lower based on, and the contributing factor was, the biggest risk was speed.
This is...
In fatal collisions.
This is London.
In London,
the City of London.
Yes.
And this is before their... I mean, they've done a... They're trying to cut... They've cut the cars through emissions and congestion tax. So they've deliberately and I should say, actually, the low traffic neighbourhoods of, in England, places like Oxford and those places, has had a big effect, a seriously big effect.
And equally, in July this year, Helsinki had a massive, I think, globally,
yes,
zero deaths.
Zero deaths. And interesting, that has been their target.
Wow.
Our target has never been zero.
Mm.
I mean, we've gone from 1066, you know, down to a bit over 200.
Well, it's a reduction. It's a percentage reduction on the previous year, yeah, rather than having zero.
Yeah, but none. The point about it is to have the goal of zero.
Mm.
Whether you achieve it or not, that's not the point. The point is, this is my guiding light. And Helsinki then has showed that actually you can do it.
And a lot of it was having the smarter streets as well, how they did the street design, the infrastructure,
yeah,
as well as trying to reducing the, when car drivers, their visual in, when they're driving the streets,
yeah,
to actually automatically reduce their speed while they're travelling. So it's environmental impact as well.
And design.
And design.
Yeah. Okay, so you ready for the bad news?
Well, go.
No. Look, there's a bit of, I'm going to call it lives lost, because that's what TAC calls it now. When people talk about the road toll, there's an assumption that the word toll, T-O-double-L, is the price we pay for driving our cars. And actually, Helsinki doesn't believe that. There should be no toll for our ability to drive tolls. So from, this is for the last 12 months up till the 11th of September, so last week. 2024, now I'm just going to go mainly focused on pedestrians and cyclists. I think pedestrians are probably a better indicator of how safe our streets are. Cyclists, by, you know, usually mirror the same sort of trends. Sometimes they don't. So for those 12 months in 2024, up until the 11th of September, our pedestrian deaths in Victoria was number 35. This year, 2025, that has gone up to 42. So that is a 20% increase in 1 year.
It's massive.
It is massive. And look, the five-year average for pedestrian deaths in Victoria is 27. This is, you know, if you want to know what's, why you get the, getting these things, speed is obviously the factor, and there's a fair bit of breaking down of how actually these things work. For those superior, now talk about bicyclists. So 11 in 2024, and we're down to 3 at the moment. That's a drop of 73% over 1 year. The five-year average for cyclist deaths in Victoria is 8. So you can see, I mean, obviously we have big years. There are some years that turn around, some years that don't. But just to look at those, if I generally ask somebody, you know, in a conversation about whether they feel that there's a little bit more aggression on the road than normally, most people say yes. I mean, you only got to stand at a red light and wait 0.5 of a second before somebody toots their horn. So we're still not getting the idea, are we?
No, and I think we're also, now there's, as a society generally, there is a lot of housing strain, mortgage stress, there's, you know, anxiety around your job, your work, you know, your workplace. So all these contributing factors, it's a pressure cooker, people are, and their commute times are going up as well. Congestion, that's happening in our cities.
Yeah.
And you put all this together, distraction on the phones, and it's a multitude of different factors that can impact what's happening as we're moving through our city, whether you're walking or cycling.
Listen, we're going to go to a break in a second. We're going to come talk about Andrew's pet subject. How do you become social and ride local? But just before we leave this topic, when we talk about lives lost, and we're talking about the motorist. Nearly every year, and I'm pretty sure of this, but I might stand corrected, but between 22 and 26% of fatalities in Victoria aren't wearing seatbelts.
It's amazing with all the education campaigns that are happening.
Aren't wearing seatbelts.
It's a similar statistics. You look at, you know, vaping, and that's with all the education as well. And that, so you've got to ask yourself, where are the holes that's happening in the communication?
Yeah. We'll be back just after this.
Yarrabug would like to thank Bicycle Network for their financial support. Bicycle Network, a not-for-profit with 45,000 members, working to get more people riding for their health and well-being. Bicycle Network is proud to sponsor the Yarrabug program and support its important advocacy for safer and more accessible riding. By becoming a Bicycle Network member and or participating in one of their iconic riding events, you're supporting Bicycle Network's Ride to School programs and advocacy campaigns to make it easier for everyone to ride a bike every day. Visit bicyclenetwork.com.au for more information.
And you're back listening to the Yarrabug Show, a show about bikes, riding them, loving them, fixing them, or making sure that you're safe when you ride one on the street. Andrew, be social, ride local.
Thanks, Val. Yeah, our neighbourly ride. You may have seen one of our multitudes if you're in a city.
Yep, pretty hard to avoid, I've got to say, at some stages.
And it's, yeah, little swing tags. And it's had a phenomenal success. But ultimately, it's about community. It's about bringing people together. It's about the socialisation. And I think, you know, since COVID, we've seen people disengaged in the community, disengaged to those around them and to the local environment, to, you know, to local shops and so forth. So we've seen a huge, we did Neighbourly Ride in 2019, and since we've done it in February this year, we're pretty much reaching our max, which is 14 riders. And a lot of them are competent. I mean, we've got one rider that comes from Faulkner.
Yeah.
And it takes him, you know, an hour and a half, probably in total, is probably an almost 2 hours commuting to get to our Carlton North location. So the actual ride itself is 40 minutes.
Yeah.
But it's that socialisation. It's actually meeting people and feeling good, you know, and around with those around you, engaging with new people, having new conversations that you otherwise wouldn't have. And that sort of leads to, you know, what's happening is in, you know, our focus is loneliness and reduction of CO2. But there's a lovely report last year by the Social Connection in Australia report. It was called State of the Nation. And what was really concerning was that 32% or 3 in 10 women, or 31% of 3 in 10 men are lonely. And it gets worse for different, especially different age groups. You always associate loneliness with, you know, I guess older citizens, older people, you know, whether they're in a retirement village, or isolated. But what they found, which is even more concerning, was 18 to 24-year-olds, 38% experienced loneliness. And 34%, which is my age group, 55 to 65, identify as being lonely. And that's really concerning, that why have we moved to a point where society, with all the technology and everything that we have available to us, that we're more isolated and we're not having that connection to those, you know, people around us. And I looked into it, and there's a lot of, you know, when we did Neighbourly Ride yesterday, we saw three massive running groups on the bike path.
Yeah.
Huge.
I know, I saw two on my Sunday morning walk yesterday.
We're talking 50 to 70 in each group. Massive. Yep. And I that's sort of reflective. You know, we are focusing mainly on bicycles now with Neighbourly Ride. But I just thought there's an uptake in running, these running groups.
Yeah.
And I spoke to one recently called Tanaka. And I spoke to the owner, who's the founder of this running group that meet at a cafe in Raftown Street, very local. And he said, you know, it's all about, you know, since COVID, that, you know, people were alone and disconnected. And he came up with this program, or his club, running club, to bring people together. There wasn't any commercial element to it. It was purely just about bringing people with shared values. And there was another article in Forbes, again, this a bit focused on running. I know we're cycling.
I'm going to say anything in Forbes be corporate running.
No, so it is corporate. But this translates to anything. So, you know, it's bringing people together in a shared activity. and that promotes community. It promotes that connection. And they found in this article, is running it, and it's identical to cycle, to, you know, to riding a bike, yeah, in a group. I say in an unstructured group where people just meet up and go riding. I'm not talking about structured cycling, yep, clubs. And they said it's about that incidental intimacy. So when you have that real connection, it's a low-pressure environment. You just turn up. You're, yep, not expected to talk. You can just participate in the activity.
Yep.
It doesn't matter whether it's just a social ride or whether it's a formal group run. It's all about just that synchronous group exercise. And, you know, you're not always obligated to socialize. You can just be there, be present.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether you wish to, you know, have a conversation with someone, it's optional. There's no pressure on you to do that. And it's also about creating a sense of community that came out of this article, which is what we've found similarly with Neighbourly Ride, that people identify with being part of a group. And it's all about them, you know, in the European Journal of Psychology, they said it's all about the social identity or the group membership, how it affects, you know, people's health and well-being as well. And there's a massive impact that you think about, you know, the mental health, that what they found in this report initially from the nation of the Social Connection in Australia report was that loneliness, it's, you know, considered you're twice as likely to suffer chronic disease and 4.6 times more likely to have depression. And these are really just, you know, and also social anxiety as well. So when we talk about the bicycle does a lot of many amazing things, but I think one of them it can do is bring people together as well in a shared community, in a shared ride. And it can be very unstructured. You just turn up wherever it may be. And there's, you know, hundreds of these groups around Australia where people come together, they find a ride and they connect. Yeah. And I think there's a big change that's happening as we move from being, you know, the pendulum swung quite high to the right in terms of being isolated, you work from home. And now people are coming out of that and saying, hey, social media, you know, digital connection, screens isn't the answer to me feeling to belong to a group or identify with a group.
Hey, listen, I've got an electric bikes have introduced a lot of people who haven't been riding bikes for a long time. To not just bikes as, you know, a means of getting to work, although it's used as that. And I was having a conversation with a couple of, so these are both women, both aged over 50. One's still working, I think. What you would classically say, yeah, Sunday Lycra rider, you know, a full roadie sort of thing. And the other one, electric sit-up bike, you know, ride to Kensington to volunteer, stuff like that. And Helen, one of the women, was trying to encourage the electric bike rider to come on one of the bunch rides. And it's interesting, you got a couple of the ideas of why people can be a little bit timid about this. One is, oh, my bike's not good enough. Was really interesting that actually the default position is I wouldn't have the right bike. And you know, and mm-hmm, I know, you can go on a bike ride on a step through with five gears. It does not make any difference whatsoever. That's one thing that sometimes stops people.
But I think it's all about that perception as well.
Yeah. That's what it is.
Maybe there's that fear. And it's also the anxiety of actually meeting a group. And, you know, if you and I, we're social.
Yep.
But for a lot of people, that's actually quite confronting to approach a group as well.
Yeah.
And having these secondary reasons, oh, maybe my bike's not up to it, or I'm not confident, or this, you know, it's got flat tyres, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
It's the overarching is that people just don't feel feel comfortable in these situations as well. We've got two lovely people that come. One's a 70-year-old. And she's a caboose, the person at the back.
Yep.
And we've got a 75-year-old as a ride leader.
Yep.
Both got electric bikes.
Yeah.
And it's game-changing.
Yep.
Shoot, absolutely. But I think, like to your point, it's, you know, people are concerned about, oh, I can't keep up, you know, even though it's only 8K kilometres.
I tried to convince, say, it's a no-drop ride. They're not going to leave you alone. And that's a fear with a lot of people as well, of course.
And there's a lot of different fears. I mean, we've got one person and, you know, she has a seat very low. Now, she's a runner. She's quite fit.
Yeah.
Can probably confidently run 10 kilometres. has a seat low. So that, for her, it's a barrier because she feels that, oh, if I have my seat too high, I can't touch the ground. And there's a multitude of reasons why people don't participate, and to get, and they've got to overcome those barriers, which is quite hard.
Yeah, especially as, I mean, I'm going to put this indelicately. If you add up the iPhone, YouTube, MySpace, and you keep going on that, it is all about individualism. There is no community in those places.
Absolutely.
So it's a narcissist's playground, which then can actually free people, can let people think that they're actually, I'm a sovereign citizen, I didn't say that. But that is the end point of it, actually.
But it comes to the 5 minutes of fame. Everyone wants that 5 minutes in the spotlight.
Andy,
and ultimately,
Andy Warhol, gosh. Your 5 minutes of fame and the rest of your life as infamy.
And, they've given us this vehicle that we can get the constant 5 minutes of fame on your screen.
Hey, listen, we're going to run tight for this, but I just want to touch on another thing. Yes, group rides are important. I've got a couple of people associated, say, with Second Chance Cycles, where riding is more to the point of, say, the loneliness of a long-distance runner. Actually, them on the bike by themselves is the therapy session. And they really, I'm going to use a line from Emily Kaczorek here, it's hard to cry and pedal at the same time. And actually, the bicycle works on that, sort of like a daily pill in some ways. So you've got that side of it as well.
No, absolutely. I mean, I love going riding on my own as well, just that way. It's meditative as well because you've got that rhythm as you ride, you turn the pedal strokes. But we've got another woman that comes regularly. She'll probably win our participation award. And she said it's changed her life. It's game-changing for her. And to have that socialization as well. So that comes back to the loneliness. And to be with other people and to be revered in that group as well.
I'll go back to that quote at the top of the show. One bike can change your life.
Absolutely.
You know, it does in a lot of ways. Was there something else I wanted to touch on? Look, the other thing with, I'm sure you get the reaction in your group of 14 that people do actually feel safer in that group than they would if they were riding by themselves.
Yes, and that's a big thing that people...
That perception.
Perception again. And people not being familiar with where they go. I mean, we do different routes every week. And the main reason for that is people to find the different tips and tricks about, okay, well, I'm confident riding from A to B to work. But if I digress from that known route, I'm quite fearful. How do I cross a main road? How do I cross that Nicholson Street? How do we move confidently within our neighbourhood?
Yeah.
You know, until we get that density of infrastructure, how do we move to our local shops or go to school where children can ride? So that's the other thing, is building that confidence with the local community and getting and like being that springboard to say, hey, you're quite safe here. If you've never ridden, we've got actually two people who come, and the only time they've ridden their bike is on our ride, literally.
Ooh.
The only time. So that one's done.
Is that a safety issue? Sorry.
No, no, not at all. I mean, we travel to the lowest rider.
So I mean for them.
Yeah, it is a safety issue.
Yeah.
And they're not confident at all. So they know if they can get to the start, they can move within our group.
Yeah.
And then they've got a short commute to get home. Yeah. So absolutely about safety.
There was something else I was going to say. The other thing is, I'm sure, maybe you don't see it, I'm not going to put words in your mouth. Cyclists can be good evangelists, good prophesizer. They can be over the top as well. I mean, the bicycle is a solution to every problem. But they are very good at actually encouraging other people.
Absolutely. And I think people look for aspiration and to be inspired by other people. And especially people that we have, especially one of our ride leaders, she's very experienced herself and she's been able to encourage other people to ride. Because they see her and go, wow, if she's in, you know, she's not that experienced, that inspires me to actually get out there and ride a bike.
I've got a 94-year-old who comes down to Second Chance so I could bump his tyres up. So if you want to have something to actually look forward to, every time I do that, I'll look at him and go, well, there's the future. Keep going.
Absolutely.
Hey, listen, Andrew, we'll put up a link on the website. Give us an idea of where to find you.
Just thanks, Val. Just go to neighbourlyride.com. We've got all the information there. And we're pleased to announce that we are opening in Hampton in February next year. So we've just got a community grant. So.
Great website. I've got a community grant from which council?
From Bayside.
Oh, good.
So we've got a few others. So we're looking to expand across inner Melbourne and then further afield.
Perfect. Listen, I'm going to do an Amy Goodman now. We're gone. Thank you very much, Andrew.
Thank you, Val.
Next up is a Shebop.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.